pizza gas. Grab that cash with both hands and make a stash. New car caviar, four-star daydream. Think of buying a football team. Money.
Oh, we better fade this out before those two nasty words pop up. You know, the ones that have the initials BS. They should have let it go. It's Monday. I'm back live today for the first time in nearly, a couple of weeks. Had nothing but trouble. We think we've got it figured out. We don't know. We'll find out pretty soon. I had to make a determination that our modem, et cetera, was 3.5 years old. And technology surpasses just how long those things are going to last. So I had to go and trade it and pick up another one. No additional cost per month, except that when I was on the phone with the guy getting all my password junk sorted out, I want my passwords, not the one they give you. He said, you know, I got a suggestion for you. He said, given what you've described to me, the number of people that are using Wi-Fi and the number of computers you've got, et cetera, I'd like to suggest that you increase your speed. And it's $5 a month for a year. Well, we'll find out what it'll be the next year. But interesting enough, once we got all that stuff done and I started up my computer, my main desktop has never started so fast. More than triple the speed. Anyway, Jeff Bennett here. The edge. You know, the edge of darkness is more like it. Maybe I should have kept that title. I don't know. Well, the days dwindled down to a possibly not so precious few. Herbert Marcuse once said, free election of masters does not abolish the masters or the slaves. You see, Republicans and Democrats alike fear that the other party will attempt to hijack the election. Trump is convinced that mail-in ballots are a scam, except in Florida, where it's safe to vote by mail because of its great Republican governor. Oh, God, please. Of course, the FBI, thanks, Dr. E, I'm glad you're listening, glad you're out there. The FBI is worried about foreign hackers continuing to target and exploit vulnerabilities in the nation's electoral system, sowing distrust about the parties, the process, and, of course, the outcome. Of course, I'm not overly worried. After all, the voting booths have already been hijacked by a political elite comprised of both Republicans and Democrats, each who are determined to retain power at all costs. The outcome? It's a foregone conclusion, my friends. The deep state will win and we, the people, will lose. The damage has already been done. Department of Homeland Security, which has been tasked with helping to secure the elections and protect the nation against cyber attacks, is not exactly an agency known for its adherence to freedom principles. After all, this is the agency largely responsible for turning the American Republic into a police state. And since its creation, post-9/11, the DHS has ushered in the domestic use of surveillance drones, expanded the reach of fusion centers, stockpiled an alarming amount of ammunition, including hollow point bullets, urged Americans to become snitches through a See Something, Say Something campaign. They've overseen the fumbling antics of TSA agents everywhere, militarized the nation's police, spied on activists and veterans, distributed license plate readers and cell phone trackers to law enforcement agencies. They've contracted to build detention camps, carried out military drills and lockdowns in American cities, conducted virtual strip searches of airline passengers, established constitution-free border zones. They've funded citywide surveillance cameras, and they've undermined the Fourth Amendment at every turn. So, no, I'm not losing a night's sleep over the thought that this election might buy any more rigged than it already is. And I'm not holding my breath in the hopes that the winner of this year's popularity contest will save us from government surveillance, or weaponized drones, or militarized police, or endless wars, SWAT team raids, asset forfeiture schemes, over-criminalization, profit-driven private prisons, oh, that's a big one, graft and corruption, or any of the other evils that masquerade as official government business these days. My friend Michael Nesser and I have had long discussions for many, many years about the profit-driven private prisons due to a guy who was a friend of his that got set up. Oh, and he wound up going to prison, and eventually his wife divorced him, and yeah, well, they don't care. You see, the DHS and Americans in general want to believe the fantasy that, well, forget the DHS, it's dumb Americans. They all want to believe the fantasy that politics matter. They want to be persuaded that there's a difference between Republicans and Democrats, but there's not. Well, some will swear that Trump has been an improvement over Obama. In so many ways, that just isn't the case. Others, of course, are convinced that Biden's values are different from Trump's. Keep in mind that with both of them, money talks, but then I think Biden is so brain dead that he doesn't even know what money is anymore. No. You see, my friends, most of all, the voters, they want to buy into the fantasy that when they elect a president, they're getting someone who truly represents the citizenry rather than the deep state. In fact, in the oligarchy that is the American police state, an elite group of wealthy donors is calling the shots, in cooperation with the political elite. The sad truth is, it doesn't matter who wins the White House, because they all work for the same boss, corporatocracy. Understanding this, of course, many corporations hedge their bets on who will win the White House by splitting their donations between the demon craps and the republic rats. Politics is merely a game. It's a joke, a hustle, a con, a distraction, a spectacle. Oh, it's a sport. And for many devout Americans, it is a religion. It's merely a political illusion, my friends, aimed at persuading the citizenry that we are free, that our votes count, and that we actually have some control over the government when, in fact, we are prisoners of the corporate elite. In other words, it is a sophisticated ruse aimed at keeping us divided and fighting over two parties whose priorities, more often than not, are exactly the same. Because they don't want us to join forces and do what the Declaration of Independence suggests, which is to throw the whole damn lot out and start over again. No, my friends, it's no secret that both parties support endless war, engage in out-of-control spending, ignore the citizenry's basic rights. They have no respect for the rule of law because they're bought and paid for by big business. They care most about their own power, and have a long record of expanding government and shrinking liberty. And most of all, both parties enjoy an intimate, incestuous history with one another and with the moneyed elite that rule this country. Despite the jabs that the candidates volley at each other for the benefit of the cameras, they're a relatively chummy bunch away from the spotlight. How many years have you heard me open commentary like this and discuss that on Sunday night they're all getting together with big cigars and nice brandy and cognac, etc., etc., determining who's going to be the winner that week. All of this, despite Congress's so-called political gridlock, our elected officials seem to have no trouble finding common ground when it's time to collectively kowtow to the mega corporations, the lobbyists, the defense contractors, and other special interest groups to whom they have pledged their true allegiance. Oh, my friends, don't be fooled by the smear campaigns and the name-calling or drawn into their divide-and-conquer politics of hate. They're just useful tactics that have been proven to engage voters and increase voter turnout while keeping the citizenry at each other's throats. It is merely la grande illusion. You know, it used to be that the cogs, the wheels, the gears, shifts, and the government machinery worked to keep the republic running smoothly. However, without our fully realizing it, the mechanism has changed. Its purpose is no longer to keep our republic running smoothly. Oh, to the contrary. This particular contraption's purpose is to keep the deep state in power. Its various parts are already a corrupt part of the whole. And so just consider how insidious and beholden to the corporate elite. Oh, and let's not forget the incestuousness. Various parts of the mechanism have all become. Congress, of course, the most notorious offenders and most obvious culprits in the creation of the corporate state. Congress has proven itself to be both inept and avaricious. Oblivious champions of an authoritarian system that is systematically dismantling their constituents' fundamental rights. Long before they're elected, congressmen are trained to dance to the tune of their wealthy benefactors, so much so that they spend two-thirds of their time in office raising money, not only for their supporters, but ensure that they've got more than enough to run for re-election. As Reuters once reported, for many lawmakers, the daily routine in Washington involves fundraising as much as legislating. The culture of nonstop political campaigning shapes the rhythms of daily life in Congress as well as the landscape around the Capitol. It also means that lawmakers often spend more time listening to the concerns of the wealthy than they do listening to us, we the people. Of course, the second, you know, gear in this whole thing is the presidency. You see, what Americans want in a president and what they need are two different things. The making of a popular president is an exercise in branding and marketing and creating alternate realities for the consumer. In other words, the citizenry. All of which allows them to buy into a fantasy about life in America that is utterly divorced from our increasingly grim reality. Take Trump, for instance, who got elected by promising to drain the swamp in D.C. But instead of putting an end to the corruption, he's paved the way for lobbyists and corporations and the military-industrial complex and the rest of the deep state, also referred to as the Seventh Floor Group, all to feast on the carcass of a dying American republic. And so the lesson? To be a successful president, it doesn't matter whether you keep your campaign promises, sell the American people to the highest bidder, or march in lockstep with the corporate state, so long as you keep telling people what they most want to hear. And of course, I guess this becomes the topic of the day. The Supreme Court. Once the last refuge of justice, the one governmental body really capable of rolling back the slowly emerging tyranny enveloping America, has instead become the champion of American police state, absolving government and corporate officials of their crimes while relentlessly punishing the average American for exercising his or her rights. And like the rest of government, the court has routinely prioritized profit, security, and convenience over the basic rights of the citizenry. Oh, indeed, law professor Erwin Chemerinsky made a compelling case at the Supreme Court, whose justices have overwhelmingly come from positions of privilege. Almost unerringly throughout its history, sides with the wealthy, the privileged, and the powerful. Then, of course, we have the media. The triumvirate of total control would be completely ineffective without a propaganda machine provided by the world's largest corporations. Besides shoveling drivel down our throats at every possible moment, the so-called news agencies, which are supposed to act as bulwarks against government propaganda, have instead become the mouthpieces of the state. The pundits, which pollute our airwaves, are at best merely court jesters, and at worst, propagandist for the false reality created by the American government. And when you have internet and media giants like Google and NBC and New Universal News Corporation, Turner Broadcasting, Reuters, Comcast, Time Warner, Viacom, Public Radio International. And that's what it is. It's not National Public Radio. It's Public Radio International. You got the Washington Post Company. All these donate to political candidates. You no longer have an independent media. What we used to refer to as the Fourth Estate, that which could be trusted to hold the government accountable. But finally, there's one more cog in this wheel. The American people. Because we, the people, now belong to a permanent underclass in America. It doesn't matter what you call us. Chattel, slaves, worker bees, it's all the same. What matters is that we are expected to march in lockstep with and submit to the will of the state in all matters, public and private. And unfortunately, through our complicity in matters large and small, we have allowed an out-of-control corporate state apparatus to take over every element of American society. We, my friends, are playing against a stacked deck. The game is rigged. And we, the people, keep getting dealt the same losing hand. The people dealing the cards, the politicians, corporations, the judges, the prosecutors, the police, the bureaucrats, the military, the media, etc. They only have one prevailing concern, and that is to maintain their power and control over you and I, while milking us of our money and possessions. It really doesn't matter what you call them. Republicans, Democrats, the 1%, the elite, the controllers, masterminds, the shadow government, the police state, the surveillance state, the military-industrial complex, doesn't matter. So long as you understand that while they are dealing the cards, the deck will always be stacked in their favor. Our failure to remain informed about what is taking place in our government, to know and exercise our rights, to vocally protest, to demand accountability on the part of all of our government representatives, and at a minimum to care about the plight of our fellow Americans, it's been our downfall. And so we now find ourselves once again caught up in the spectacle of another presidential election. And once again, the majority of Americans are acting as if this election will make a difference and bring about change. As if the new boss will be different from the old boss. Let me share some words with you. Because if you doubt all that I've shared with you this first 15, 16 minutes, remember what the astute commentator George Carlin had to say about the matter. He says, the politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have no choice. You have owners. They own you. They own everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. Oh, they got the judges in their back pockets, and they own all the big media companies. And so they control just about all the news and information you get to hear. They got you by the balls. They spend billions of dollars every year lobbying to get what they want. Well, we know what they want. They want more for themselves and less for everyone else. But I'll tell you what they don't want. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. Oh, they're not interested in that. It doesn't help them. It's against their interests. They want obedient workers. Obedient workers, people who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork. Oh, it's a big club, man, and you ain't in it. You and I are not in the big club. The table is tilted, folks. The game is rigged. Nobody seems to notice. And nobody seems to care. And that's what the owners count on. It's called the American dream. because you have to be asleep to believe it. In simple terms, my friends, the election's already been hijacked, and the winner's been decided. We the people will once again lose. God. It is so difficult to live in these times. I was on Facebook today, and the more I stayed there, the angrier I became. Portland, Oregon, last night, the thugs were out again and were able to pull over statues of Abe Lincoln, who I'm no fan of, and Robert E. Lee. Today was the 150th anniversary of the death of Robert E. Lee. And they had to put their foul spray painting all over the place. And one of the leaders specifically crammed it down everyone's throat by making sure that pictures were taken of her. And yet the media continues to support these people. The police continue to do nothing to stop them. It's all part of the game, my friends. And so we must face who the enemies of we the people are. It comes in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different categories. Consider some of these people. The trillionaire shadow government is made up of 4 key players. The Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, the Vatican, and the Windsors. The Windsors being the Queen of England and her family. Then we've got the billionaire disciples. Buffett, George Soros, Dr. Kissinger, Bill Gates, Bloomberg, Jeff Bezos at Amazon, and Zuckerberg over at Facebook. And what is their agenda? Population control and reduction. Global digital currency. And we'll be talking about that more tomorrow, because something finally hit me hard today regarding the global digital currency. Digital is the key word. And, of course, the rest of their agenda is this one world order business. And their formula? The cause of the problems? Plandemics. Economic crashes. And the one that they've used so well this year. I can't breathe. How do they fund their reactions? Lockdown, masks and distancing. Riots and lawlessness, anarchy and chaos. But do they have a mandate for the solution? Vaccine and ID microchip. Last week I published a piece, very in-depth discussion about that is the goal, that is the plan. Mandatory vaccination. They want a cashless system. And they want their new world order. They're demanding it. And they are going to get it. Is there a way for us to get out of this? More and more each and every day, my friends, I am beginning to come to the belief that no, there is not. I think it's done. I know that's a terrible, terrible thing to say to you. That's not what you tune in for. You tune in to be given hope. Is there hope? I don't know. Wishing and hoping, da-da-da-da-da. Talking to people who care. And I know most of you care. But as I looked at this thing that happened in Portland, Oregon last night, I left a pretty foul comment. I can't recant that exact, bear with me a second, that exact comment on the air. I'll clean it up for you a little bit. But many of you know me enough to realize that how I really feel. The headline was that Portland protesters pulled down statues of, I'm sorry, Teddy Roosevelt and Abe Lincoln, not Robert E. Lee. And my comment was, and just a few minutes up the road is a statue of Vlad Lenin. But you sorry, bottomed, low-life, worthless mofos, don't tear down the Vlad. My comment was, I hope you all rot in hell. And for those who continue to sit back and allow this garbage to continue, your time is coming as well. Now, you can read into a lot of that. You can determine exactly what my meaning was. I am fed up with the governor of Oregon. I've been long fed up with her. The mayor of Portland, who had to move a couple of times because, oh well, they found out where he lived and started harassing him. It's bad news. Law enforcement does nothing to stop it. The governor does nothing to stop it. They sit there and just look and watch and do what? My comment was on another image, when does this poo-poo cease to be accountable, acceptable? Where in the hell are the defenders of this nation's damned kitty cats? It's unacceptable. Oh, I've had to clean up both of those statements for you folks. I'm angry. I'm fed up. I finally saw a gun on online the other day that really excited me. It was a rifle. It was a six-shooter. I mean, it had, you know, a whole rotating thing for 12-gauge cartridges. Oh, baby, I want that so bad. Because I know it's going to come. It's going to come. One of the comments I left regarding the bringing down of the statues is one of the ones I shared with you. And Judy made a comment about 10 years. In other words, why aren't they going to jail? Why aren't they being arrested? Because the courts let them out the next day. That's all part of the game. Judy says 10 years. I chose to respond to her. I said, Judy, uh-uh. And I posted a picture of a single body hanging in a tree. We get together each night and throughout the course of this day. And Michael, if you don't mind, let's let the time just keep running through tonight. Can you pull that? Guess not. Thank you. I've been off the air for too long. I need every second I can get. Thanks. And no offense to our sponsors. We need them as well. The more I'm into this, the more I realize that the public is going to sit back and do absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. They're scared to death, too. It's appalling to me, my friends. Maybe they're just waiting for the right time. Maybe they're waiting for Election Day to see if we're going to have the right outcome. That Trump will get elected and all the problems will disappear. Are you out of your minds? Is that what you honest to God really believe? If he wins, it's probably going to get worse. If he loses and it goes to Joe Harris, come on, Joe's not going to make it. And I think that Pelosi's counting on that. She, honest to God, thinks she's going to slip in. Please, somebody shoot her. Just shut her up. Oh, Jeff, that's not a very Christian thing to say. Don't give me that garbage. Let me share a couple stories with you. History. In March of 1861, the kind-hearted Tsar of Russia, Alexander II, issued a proclamation which liberated the serfs of Russia. Now, up to that time, the serfs had not been allowed to leave the huge agricultural tracts of land owned by the aristocracy of Russia. The serfs were attached by law to the place where they were born. As an unintended consequence of Tsar Alexander's generosity, his action prompted millions of ex-serfs to leave the isolation of the Russian vastness and move to the cities, where they became a rootless proletariat. 1945, the U.S. emerged triumphant from World War II, totally intact. The American economy was vibrant. Gold reserves held by the Federal Reserve amounted to some 25 to 26,000 tons. And with the war having ended, countries around the world, which has sent their gold to the U.S. for safekeeping, began to repatriate their gold. And while the Europeans and the Japanese were busy rebuilding their countries after the devastation of World War II, the U.S. was intact, and its population confident that a bright future lay ahead. And the population was so confident that it began to object to the smoky industries which polluted the air that it breathed. And soon the new government policy was to abolish contamination and substitute imports for the absence of production from smoky industries. And in due course, it was found that national production was not really necessary to the well-being of the American nation. Why produce when the U.S. could purchase everything it wanted by offering the poor exporters of the world some of the precious dollars of the U.S.? Now, the unforeseen consequence of this policy, as we all know, was the deindustrialization of the United States. And with the disappearance of its industry, there disappeared its well-paying jobs. But the disappearance of jobs was accompanied with the disappearance of gold from the reserves of the U.S. government, as gold was sent abroad in payment of increasing trade deficits with the rest of the world. And then came into existence a huge proletariat of unemployed Americans who lived off government handouts. And yet handouts on the part of government cannot prevent the masses of unemployed or subemployed from being unhappy. Unemployment or subemployment is demoralizing. And as gold disappeared from treasury vaults in payment of export deficits, there finally arrived a moment, August the 15th of 1971, when President Nixon was forced to stop paying for U.S. export deficits in gold. And from that moment to the present, the U.S. has paid for imports with irredeemable dollars. You see, that is the best one-and-a-half-sentence description I've ever read regarding Nixon stop paying for U.S. exports in gold. You see, the rest of the world could convert all their amassed dollars and demand gold in payment. And we had to fork it out. Oh, you and I couldn't do it, but they could. And so now we come to the present. There's a very remarkable similarity, for much different reasons. In the discontent of the masses of U.S. unemployed or subemployed today, with the discontent of the rootless masses of Russian kulaks in 1917. In both cases, yesterday, the rootless kulaks of Russia of 1917, and today, the unemployed or subemployed of the U.S., both are the object of manipulation by revolutionaries who wish to establish a different political economic system, one called socialism. You see, the U.S., we cannot alter our ways. We cannot return to gold because that would require a wrenching, unbearably painful social reorganization of U.S. society. Oh, Trump may win the election, but the fundamental cause of unrest, the unemployment or the subemployment of masses of Americans, cannot be eliminated without a return to gold, which is politically impossible. And thus, my friends, the revolutionaries in the U.S. have the upper hand. And so if the revolutionaries come to power in the U.S., the immediate casualty will be the dollar, which will collapse in international value and force the U.S. to return to gold. And forced to return to gold, the U.S. will immediately lose its international stature, which is built upon the irredeemable U.S. dollar. But you see, the great danger for the U.S. and the world is that the socialists, who are likely to achieve power in this country, may, in desperation, resort to a suicidal World War III. And the U.S. will lose that war. And nothing would remain of the great U.S. but smoking ruins. That commentary came from a man that I have unbelievable respect for. He's probably one of the most knowledgeable economic human beings on the planet. He's no longer writing weekly, once, maybe twice a month. Hugo Salinas Price. I will have this piece published later this evening. I know you don't like hearing it, but it is reality, my friends. It is absolutely reality. Let's share a little story with you. A little challenge, as it were. If you were to come out where I live, in the Southwest Desert, and catch 100 red fire ants, as well as 100 large black ants, and put them in a jar, at first nothing will happen. But if you violently shake the jar and dump them back on the ground, the ants will fight until they eventually kill each other. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? You see, the thing is that the red ants think the black ants are the enemy, and vice versa. When in reality, the real enemy is the person who shook the jar, which is exactly what's happening in society today. Liberal versus conservative, black versus white, pro-mask and anti-mask. The real question we need to be asking ourselves is, who's really shaking the jar? And why? Simple question. I have a piece I'm going to share with you. And when I'm done, hopefully I can get through it all in time. I'm going to tell you the backstory that goes behind it. There's going to be some names that I may mention that are going to mean nothing to you because they're so far in the past. But keep in mind that with everything that happens, the names change, the players change, the leaders change, but other things don't change. The column is entitled, "While Conservatives Sleep." And let it be stipulated that what passes for conservatism today has very little to do with the genius vision of the founders of this nation, whose brave patriots who sacrificed life and property toward the establishment of a republic based upon the doctrine of limited government interference into the lives of its citizenry. Now, this is one that I think is a perfect closing to all that we've talked about this evening, but you've got to stick around to the end of the story. As a chronic peruser of and contributor to various conservative news foray, the author states, I am struck daily with the acquiescence of modern Republicans, especially in the face of a dismembering of the Bill of Rights. The first 10 amendments, which are so central to the American success story. From the FBI's carnivore and magic lantern cyber snooping technology to the traffic light cameras implanted to record and to record the faces of every automobile driver and passenger, to Echelon, a multinational privacy infringement project, the Fourth Amendment guarantee against unreasonable searches and seizures, it's effectively dead. And with nary a whimper from the conservative voting populace, or so-called conservative voting populace. As well, our president and attorney general are preparing to charge American Taliban adherent John Walker Lind with sedition instead of the appropriate crime of treason. And the decision to do so will not be a simple faux pas. You see, sedition connotes unlawful speech against the government, whereas treason is warranted with one action, the aiding and abetting of an enemy of the state. Oh, there's no doubt, following open confessions on news media channels, that Mr. Walker, or could be Mr. X at this point, deliberately and cognizantly entered into acts which constitute treason. But a sedition charge will serve the government even more effectively. Plainly stated, by prohibiting certain speech, a chilling effect bodes heavily on the First Amendment, imperiling any who might dare to speak out against those in power. Our current government has, by a carnivore, magic lantern, an echelon, and in making mandatory global positional system, or GPS technology, in every newly made cellular phone, implanted mechanisms by which to capture said prohibition speech, and to monitor, isolate, and capture so-called dissenters. My criticism, the author continues, of conservatives is launched herein for good reason. Chiefly, there are but a handful remaining of honorable or semi-honorable old left or left libertarian activists and pundits, if there were ever more than but a handful. People of the time that he mentioned, Nat Hentoff, Christopher Hitchens, Camille Paglia, they spring immediately to mind. But the right, as students of the Constitution, should know better. The founders of this nation recognized the inherent evil that it is. By nature, every government, anyone who has read the collected Federalist Papers knows this. And for those of you who have not read them, congresspersons especially should. In fact, the reading of the Federalist Papers and the complete diaries and political writings of our founders should be a stringent requirement for public office, and frankly, for public education. You see, our nation was built on the notion that humans band together to create government and only to protect the rights of those whose rights are infringed upon by others. Unlike the former USSR, Red China, or the Articles of the United Nations, our government grants no rights. It merely safeguards the inalienable rights granted to us by our Creator. George Washington, a fairly strong supporter of central government, wrote that government is not reason, it is not eloquence, it is force. And like fire, it is a dangerous servant and a fearful master. Of course, Thomas Jefferson went much further, exhorting ominously that the tree of liberty must, from time to time, be watered by the blood of patriots and tyrants. And Patrick Henry, a philosopher, an activist dearest to mine own heart, conceded nothing as he laid down the gauntlet to King George III and future tyrants, crying, "Give me liberty or give me death." Compared to these fearless men, today's conservatives, the vast bulk of them, are neuters, eunuchs, piddling running dogs at the scrap table of American history. Oh, you might expect that we'll follow next with an anti-war polemic, as is currently fashionable among the right libertarian axis, but no, you'd be wrong. The Al-Qaeda should be exterminated, followed swiftly by those who lend them aid and comfort, wherever it may lead. He says, "I have no quarrel with the president on this account, and there are more pressing concerns. Anyway, to wit, consider, for instance, the last time you witnessed vigorous opposition to the following by the Republican National Committee, or in the pages of Front Page Magazine, Enter Stage Right, Newsmax, National Review, or Lucien.com, and even FreeRepublic.com. United Nations, founded, organized domestically at the Bretton Woods and Dumbarton Oaks conferences by known Soviet agents Alger Hiss, Harry Dexter White, Harry Hopkins, and Lucien Curie, all known to the State Department as communists, but who nonetheless continue to operate on U.S. taxpayers' dimes as the highest of political levels and with the most sensitive of security clearances. Similar to the manner in which Representative Gary Condit continued to hold his seats on four intelligence oversight committees during his tenure. Of course, then we also have the Social Security Administration. Nothing more than an egregious Marxist redistribution scheme, originally enacted as a 1% temporary and voluntary contribution. Yes, it was voluntary, but whose total rate of thievery, that's the employer's contributions included, now results in a whopping 15%+ tax burden on every working soul in America. Robbery, by any other name, my friends. Thirdly, the 16th Amendment, or progressive income tax. Simply, the harder one works and the more one earns, the more heavily one is penalized by government. All a progressive tax on income is unsurprisingly the second plank of the Marx-Engels Communist Manifesto. Of course, then, there's the Federal Reserve System, a wholly private banking cartel supervised very nominally by government and unaccountable to the voting citizenry. A central bank, opposed by every U.S. president and vehemently by Democrat Andrew Jackson and Republican Abe Lincoln, believe it or not. Finally forced down the throats of Congress by socialist Woodrow Wilson and his shadow president, Edward Mandel House, founder of the Council on Foreign Relations. And since the formation of the Fed, which is an intentional misnomer in that it is no more federal than it is constitutional, money is backed neither by silver nor gold, thanks to FDR, but on the full faith and credit of our own gullibility. And were the average American to operate his household's budget in the manner that does the Fed, he'd be in prison. And if you don't trust me, just try printing your own bills at home. And when the government performs self-same, it's called deficit spending, Keynesian economics, or monetarianism. Fifth and finally, the 10th Amendment. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited by it to the states are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. Simply put, if it ain't expressly in the Constitution, then it ain't federal. And all this stands as the most bastardized amendment in the Bill of Rights. Most governmental agencies, those claiming federal status in D.C., are most assuredly not. These and our ruinous open borders, my friends, which led directly to the September 11th massacre, are the central issues so critical to the continued existence of the United States of America as a sovereign constitutional republic, and which fail to register more than a blip on the conservative agenda. We the people are being bled dry by unresponsive representatives who appear more and more like a permanent ruling class and are being set up for global governance under the rubric of the UN, whose bills we the people pay at the rate of 23% of that body's total budget. And while its administration, unelected by and unresponsive to the American people, are openly hostile to our constitutional foundation, they craft an agenda for an Orwellian superstate. All of which begs the question, are we suicidal or merely so complacent or cowed and timid that we cannot recognize Jefferson's other major dictum, which is, when the people fear their government, there is tyranny. When the government fears the people, there is liberty. It will be a bloody, awful tragedy where the Second Amendment, those fabled 8 million deer rifles, to stand as our last recourse. Well, for starters, there's a hell of a lot more than 8 million of them out there today. for seconds. And if you think about the piece that we opened with for the first 18 or 20 odd minutes of the program that talked about very similar things, where have we been? That which I've just shared with you was written by Todd Brendan Fahey. It was published as article number 1491. It's entitled While Conservatives Sleep. My friends, it was published on the First Generation Federal Observer, January 14th, 2002. And so you see, in all of these years, nearly 20 years, 18 plus years, it's only gotten worse. And we've sat there and we've tuned in to shortwave and to RBN and to other networks, et cetera, et cetera. And we've been entertained every day and every night. And maybe we've supported various networks and we've bought their products. And we've been entertained. Is that what you tune in for? Just to be entertained? Because I've laid it out to you tonight. And if you don't get it, and you don't begin to respond and don't begin to react and be ready, then I've just wasted another hour of my life. And you've wasted another hour of yours. Gee, I'm sorry if that's offensive to you. It's reality, people. We've given you enough history tonight that you can see that this is the plan. It gets worse and worse. And you'll go turn your televisions on and you'll watch some of the hearings of Barrett with her Supreme Court thing tonight from earlier today. I don't have time for it. I'm too busy. I got enough stuff to do. It's not that I don't want to know, but I've got my places, my resources to go, to watch, to listen, to pick up on what I have to. But the fact of the matter is, it's exactly what I've shared with you. The phrase, the fall of America, suggests some cataclysmic event ended the American empire, which had stretched from Maine to California and Florida to Washington. But at the end, there was no straining at the gates. No barbarian horde that dispatched the empire in one fell swoop. Rather, the empire fell slowly as a result of challenges from within and without, and changing over the course of hundreds of years until its form was unrecognizable. And my friends, to me, that form we're living in today, tonight, is unrecognizable. Our course has changed dramatically. Once again, I'm glad I'm closer to the end of my life than the beginning. I'm sad. Without apology, I'm out of here. I'll see you at sundown. Good night. Do you think we have time? Do you think we have time? These are the days of the open hand. We will not be the last. Look around now. These are the days of the beggars and the choosers. This is the year of the hungry man, whose place is in the past, hand in hand with ignorance and legitimate excuses. The rich declare themselves poor, and most of us are not sure if we have a too much, but we're taking our chances, say. I sang 20 years and a day, but nothing changed. The human race found some other guy,
and walked into the flame. It's hard to love, there's so much to hate. Hanging on to hope when there is no hope to speak out. In the wounded skies above, say it's much too late. Then maybe we should all be praying for time. Charity, charity is the coat you wear twice a year. Yeah, this is the year of the guilty man. Your television takes a stand, and you find that what was over there is over here. So you scream from behind your door. Say what's mine is mine and not yours. I may have too much, but I'll take my chances. Say, I sang it 20 years and a day. There's nothing changed. The human race found some other guy and walked into the flames. It's hard to love. Jesus has so much to hate. Hanging on to woe, there is no hope to speak out. In the wounded skies above, say it's much too late. Then maybe we should all be praying for time.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. While we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country, here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store, or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.